From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Thursday, October 21st.
The business itself is more about recruiting than it is about selling a product. And what we know in our American history of businesses like that is that they're often called pyramid schemes.
That was Jenner First, co-director of the Amazon documentary series, LuLaRich, which tells the story of an alleged pyramid scheme at the company LuLaRoe. The two directors of the series join me a bit later in the show, but first, your morning headlines. President Biden's signature plan to spend big on infrastructure, education, and climate keeps shrinking in the face of compromise and a slim Democratic majority in Congress. Free community college, gone. A permanent child tax credit, gone. Funding for universal pre-K, scaled back. But Democratic lawmakers are hopeful they're close to a deal on this Build Back Better plan. Biden himself is getting involved in discussions with party moderates and progressives on the proposal that now figures in the $1.75 to $1.9 trillion range across 10 years of spending. That's down from the original $3.5 trillion. The White House released a plan to vaccinate kids between the ages of 5 and 11. That's pending authorization from the FDA, which meanwhile has authorized booster shots of Moderna and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, as well as mixing and matching shots. In terms of logistics for giving kids their first shot, the White House says it has enough supply to equip thousands of healthcare facilities, schools, and pharmacies. Vaccination for young kids can curb transmission of the virus and, of course, save young lives, as we heard yesterday from Dr. Eric Feigl-Dang on the podcast.
There's been a lot of misinformation that kids are practically immune. Oh, don't worry about kids. Kids' death rates are so low. 20 kids per week dying of COVID is not morally acceptable.
Climate change isn't just disastrous, it's bad for your health. That's the focus of a new report from the medical journal, The Lancet. It details the growing dangers to health caused by wildfire smoke, heat waves, disease-carrying insects, droughts, and floods, all worsened by man-made carbon emissions. And now to our interview. In 2013, Mark and Deanne Stidham founded LuLaRoe, a multi-level marketing firm that sells clothing. The company says it gave independent retailers the opportunity to become business owners, but dozens of lawsuits accuse it of operating a pyramid scheme. Documentary series LuLaRich, available on Amazon Prime Video, shows the company's meteoric rise and spectacular downfall. Directors Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason join me today to share their story. Jenner, let's talk about LuLaRoe. What is it?
LuLaRoe is a multi-level marketing company that sells leggings, women's accessories. The company started with modesty dresses. And the way it works is that a new retailer gets an amount of clothing. It's essentially a wholesale purchase, and that they're responsible for selling the leggings. But what we discovered in our series is that the way that most people made explosive amounts of money was to recruit people. And that's the controversy, is that the business itself is more about recruiting than it is about selling a product. And what we know in our American history of businesses like that is that they're often called pyramid schemes.
Julia, how did you first come across this story?
It seemed very off the cuff at first. It was a story about this legging company, kind of heard of it. For me, like being a woman and being oversaturated in social media with this athleisure era. And so we looked a little further into this company and we just saw all these allegations. We saw all this ethos behind the company's message that seemed a little tricky. So Jenner and I, in all our work, like to see how something in our world where can really crack open a bigger thesis of the systemic issues that impinge upon our daily life.
You talk about systemic issues. I want to set the stage a little. The boom of LuLaRoe had this incredible mix of the post-2008 recession, the rise of social media, specifically Facebook Live, and then this faux women's empowerment message. How did all of that sort of affect their ability to have this meteoric rise?
I think it was a perfect storm, just as you laid out, all of those elements, each one building upon the other. And this happens. You know, I think from time to time, society, there's just the perfect elements, the perfect ingredients for an alchemy to occur. And I think that multi-level marketing, as it is, it's not new. You know, it's been around for decades. I think what was new here was the way that social media could be used to explosively grow recruits, and the way in which a message of women's empowerment could be used to disguise what essentially was subjugation and patriarchy.
Let's dig into the recession a little bit more. How did the Stidham couple harness economic insecurities to recruit these independent sellers?
I think after the crash in 2008, it exposed the lack of privilege that we all have. And it showed that there's a really corrosive system of power dynamics and social control with men in this country, especially white men in this country, making decisions. And I think that when our country, you know, had an economic fall, it exposed that. We didn't have enough resources to cover that up as well as America usually does to a certain extent. I mean, their boom was really in 2016. But I think that LuLaRoe could see that women are a huge underutilized economic force in our country. And what better people and group of society to tap into to really say that, hey, you're underutilized and come to us and here's how you can build off of this void, essentially. And at first, it seemed to work in terms of like people joining, people making a little bit of money. But then as we see in the structure of a pyramid, you know, if you don't get in right at the top, there's really not enough people to sell the product as it trickles down, similar to Reagan economics.
Jerry, I actually want to ask you, how would you define what an MLM is?
I think multi-level marketing has a lot of complexities that have been baked in to obscure how simple it is. But how simple it is, you join the company at this place and everybody underneath you that you are able to recruit and that they're able to recruit and that those recruits are able to recruit will all flow back to you. And you'll get to the point where you no longer need to sell any of the products because you will eventually become wealthy off of your downline. And your upline has become wealthy off of you. And the issue with multi-level marketing and the issue with pyramid schemes is that after the 13th layer, there are not enough human beings on planet Earth for you to create a downline with. And so therefore, prosperity cannot be delivered to all who take part. But why I think it's so touching for all of us is that A, multi-level marketing is not new, and B, so many aspects of society mirror multi-level marketing, including social media. And I think that's what's sticky about the story. It's not pointing the finger at LuLaRoe and being like, this one company did something so wrong. No. It's the system. It's the whole thing that we take part in. And that's the big takeaway.
You mentioned the role of social media in all of this. How did tools like Facebook Live contribute to the boom of LuLaRoe?
There's a timely quality of our story, but with all of our stories, there's a timeless quality. And I think the timeless quality is that people are searching for significance. You know, they're in this kind of maze and cloud forest of life. And it's very hard to see the forest through the trees. We have to look a certain way. Our kids have to look a certain way. We have to talk a certain way. And social media allows you to curate that and create that world. And somehow the effect of it, you know, is very rewarding. And people get to click through and they get some dopamine and they get to feel like it's real and it's actually not real. And so you take that and you layer it on top of commerce, and you layer it on top of salesmanship, and you have a sort of a runaway train where now all of a sudden people get to sell things in this sort of unreal space that society has accepted as real. And so you have, again, a perfect storm where you have multi-level marketing that required people to go door to door. You had to have a human connection. You had to let that person into your home. How many people shut the door on the vacuum salesman or shut the door on the woman selling Tupperware in the past? And now all of a sudden they're on social media. They look a certain way. They look like you want to look. They're saying the things you want to hear. and you want to have the same followers that they have, and you want to be part of that community because of the alienation of women who are in a role of taking care of children and who have been essentially edged out of the rest of society, and that they're viewed as stay-at-home mothers, their husbands are viewed as the breadwinner, quote unquote, and that search for significance takes on this kind of patriarchal quality. And I think it really played at the psychological component to how this could become such a huge company.
We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Lula Rich directors Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from the Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm here with Lula Rich documentary directors Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason. According to direct selling organization, 75% of people who were in direct retail sales in 2020 were women. 87% were white. What is it that LuLaRoe was able to capitalize on with this particular group of women who signed up?
I think white women in general have always been groomed as products, like all women in our society, but especially white women. They have this trophy mentality of being on stage essentially as a performer in an objectified role. There's an obsession over white women. There's an obsession over white women's victimhood compared to people of color. I think MLMs really target white women more because there's like this salesmanship quality that white women are closer in a patriarchal, sexist, misogynistic, racist system, gender-based system to a man, to a white man. So they almost have to replicate what's right above them on the totem pole of this societal success.
So in 14 months, from 2015 to 2016, the company grew from $70 million in sales to over $1 billion. For those at the top, they reported receiving bonus checks anywhere from $20,000 to $70,000 a month. Tell me a little bit about this financial discrepancy between the people at the top and the people at the bottom.
Well, I think it's very simple. The way the business model was set up was that those at the top would be perpetually rewarded. And if you were able to get in close to where they were, if you were able to get in early, you would be perpetually rewarded too. But if you got in at the middle, it's going to be a little bit hard to make those profits and probably impossible. And in the end, they're looking at a convention where Deanne's holding up a check for $1.4 million. And they're not even explaining to the folks that the $1.4 million is their bonuses, not the products they sold. And that was one of the most sticky moments in the film, is when Julia asked Deanne how that check even came to be. And Deanne initially lied and said that it was from parties. And Mark interjected and corrected her and said it was from bonuses. So if you're telling a new person that they can make $1.4 million and not telling them how, and it's absolutely impossible for them to make it, then that looks a lot more like a pyramid scheme.
Jenner, I'm curious, when I was watching this, I was like, I cannot believe they got Mark and Deanne to sit down for an interview. How were you able to land the founders of LuLaRoe?
Mark and Deanne are running a company that's still in business. It's still in business. You know, if you watch this series and you're baffled by all the things that happened, go on the website, you can order a startup pack. So if they're still in business and they've faced all of these lawsuits, to me and to Julia, it seemed very simple. And in fact, it was. It was very direct. A lot of people have one story about you. You must have a story about you. We're going to give the opportunity to tell your story about you. And we're going to make this film one way or the other. And if you choose to be part of it, we're going to honor the story you tell us. And we're going to give you an opportunity to respond to allegations. If you decline to be part of it, other people will do that for you. And I think that was a pitch that made a lot of sense to them because they're still in business. And if they claim that they've done nothing truly wrong other than settling lawsuits, because I think Mark's attitude was, yeah, we did something wrong and we're going to fix it, not we set out to do wrong. And I think that's the big question of the film. Did these folks set out to do wrong? Did they know better from day one?
We're going to break for a sec. We'll be right back with Lula Rich directors Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm here with Lula Rich documentary directors Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason. There was a study conducted by Truth in Advertising, and they found more than 100 LuLaRoe consultants have personally filed for bankruptcy since 2016. Yet, as you mentioned, LuLaRoe remains in business. Are you guys surprised that they haven't shut down?
I'm not so surprised they haven't shut down because they have the financial wherewithal to settle cases over and over and over again and do cleanup jobs. And I think that just to touch on the type of demographic of their company, you know, they have white privilege to use an apology as a form of their laurels. And I think that a lot of people wouldn't have that privilege.
Do we really think that if Mark and Deanne were Latino or African American or Muslim American or Asian American, that the, you know, Department of Justice wouldn't have opened up a case against them? Do we really think that this, in our system of justice here in America, you know, the fact that they're gleaming, bedazzled, white, established people, that it hasn't, as Julia said, allowed their apology to become part of their kind of resume?
Why do you guys think that this documentary has resonated with so many people in this moment?
Because it's entertaining and it's fun to watch. And behind the entertainment is a real story. We like to talk about the real issues, you know, because if viewers are really fascinated to click through and want to hear us talk about it, they'll see that behind an entertaining piece of premium content, there's a message. That's, in a way, what we've strived for from day one. And so I think why it's resonating with people is because you enjoy watching it, you know, and all the other things that come up in the series that are truly entertaining, you know, but after the water cooler about those moments is done, you're left with a bigger question about patriarchy or about late stage capitalism or about race and entrepreneurship and how it factors in the things we discussed today. And we don't hammer those things over people's heads. They're there, though. You can continue to discuss that. And we try to leave the viewer wanting more. Instead of packing that all into the show, we leave it as a conversation starter. And that's what I think has made it such an impactful event for people around the world.
Jenner, you were also the creator of Hulu's Fire Fraud. It's about the infamous 2017 music festival. What do you think the parallels are between Fire Fraud and this series?
I think the parallels are very clear. You know, it's about the corrosive quality of social media. It's about greed. And they're both about millennials. But this is a different take on millennials. This is middle American white millennials who are not so much after being on a yacht with Kendall Jenner. They're more after a white picket fence, you know, of prosperity and two Chevy Tahoes and all of that, you know, their kids going to good schools and a bunch of bake sale photos that show happiness and prosperity. And I think that based on the economic hardships that the generation has faced, there's a lot of parallels between the two stories.
What do you think the big takeaway is from this series?
Hopefully people can understand what MLMs are a little bit more, because I think that they're very under the radar. There's so many companies that have potentially good products that slyly engage people on becoming their own entrepreneurial within them. And hopefully that this series can just say, wait a second, let me just look a little deeper into this company before investing my time and my life into it with my family.
The documentary is called Lula Rich. Julia Willoughby-Nason, Jenner First, I want to thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so much for having us.
Lula Rich can be streamed on Amazon Prime Video. And now let's look ahead. Here's what else we're watching. Today marks 10 years since the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial opened in Washington, D.C. President Joe Biden is expected to make remarks along with D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and Martin Luther King III, the orator's son. Vice President Kamala Harris will also be in attendance. The 30-foot granite statue of Dr. King is based on a line from King's famous I Have a Dream speech, where he said, quote, out of the mountain of despair, a stone of hope. The House of Representatives is expected to vote on charging former Trump White House advisor Steve Bannon with criminal contempt of Congress for defying its subpoena over the January 6 riot at the Capitol. The case could lead to a major test of executive privilege. which both Trump and Bannon cite. No court has settled whether executive privilege covers conversations between sitting presidents and private citizens. Bannon was originally sought out because of his apparent knowledge of the riot before it happened. On January 5th, he said this on a podcast he hosts.
All hell is going to break loose tomorrow. Just understand this. All hell is going to break loose tomorrow.
The chamber is expected to give its approval and send the case on to the Department of Justice for prosecution. So how about a free concert to end the week? The world's first net zero carbon arena holds its grand opening in Seattle on Friday. Coldplay will be performing their first arena concert in 5 years, which will also be streaming on Amazon Music and Twitch. The arena, which the brand new NHL team Seattle Kraken calls home, runs entirely on renewable energy and produces zero waste. Have a great morning, everyone. I'll see you back on Monday. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. Our thanks to Jenner First and Julia Willoughby-Nason for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and do leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen. Alexis Ramdow and Corey Wara engineered and produced this podcast. Ariella Martin also produced. Fonda Mwangi did the research. We also had production help this week from Logan Romju. Our senior producer is Pierre Bien-Aimé, and our executive producer is Laura Beatty.